If you haven't heard this program before, it's called Health Essentials. Boy, would it be fun to talk about things that you can learn and I can learn today to where we can improve our health? Well, sure. Getting sick? That ain't no fun. So, join me this morning. I have a quote for you from Adel Selberg. I just read this, and to me, it's very interesting. Here goes. This is his quote. He's a winner of the 1950 Fields Medal in Mathematics. I'm guessing he's a smart guy. Here's what he says. The thing is, it's very dangerous to have a fixed idea. A person with a fixed idea will always find some way of convincing himself in the end that he is right. Do you think it's easy to become biased? Well, sure it is. I'm probably very biased. I'm biased against the use of toxic drugs and therapies that destroy health. Of course I am. I'm probably very biased toward remedies that are, or in favor of remedies that promote health and healing. But what I want to do is I want to read to you about a group of people that live on a Pacific island atoll called the Tokelaus. And all I want you to do is just sit back and kind of soak in the information and just kind of evaluate for yourself. I mean, who am I to tell you how to think? You make up your own mind. But I think if you have good information, you can decide for yourself what's right and what's wrong. And this comes from McGarry Taub's book, Good Calories, Bad Calories. I like him. I'm not going to tell you that I bought this book for half price, but I might have. Here goes. After the United States exploration expedition under Captain Charles Wilkes visited the Polynesian atolls of Tokelau in January 1841, the expedition scientists reporting finding no evidence of cultivation on the atolls. That means there was no farming. And they confessed their surprise that the islanders could thrive on a diet composed primarily of coconuts and fish. Tokelau came under the administration of New Zealand in the mid-1920s, but the atolls remained isolated, visited only by occasional trading ships from Samoa, 300 miles to the north. As a result, Tokelau lingered on the fringes of Western influence. The staples of the diet remained coconuts, fish, and a starchy melon known as breadfruit, which was introduced in the late 19th century, well into the 1970s. That would have been like in the 1800s when it came on board. More than 70% of the calories in the Tokelau diet came from coconut. Did you hear that number? That 70% came from coconuts. More than 50% of their calories came from fat, of which 90% was saturated fat. By the mid-1960s, the population of the Tokelau had grown to almost 2,000 individuals, and the New Zealand government, concerned about the threat of overpopulation, initiated a voluntary migration. Well, you have to understand, the Tokelau Island Atoll, not a huge landmass. Isn't that funny? When they had nearly 2,000 people, they're worried about overpopulation. So what they did was they initiated a voluntary migration program during which more than half the Tokelauans moved to the mainland of New Zealand. From 1968 to 1982, a team of New Zealand anthropologists, physicians, and epidemiologists led by Ian Pryor, they took the opportunity to study the health and the diet of the immigrants as they resettled, as well as those who remained behind on the islands as their diets were progressively westernized. This Tokelau Island migration study was a remarkably complete survey of the health and the diet of all men and women and children of the Tokelauan ancestry. It was also quite likely the most comprehensive migration study ever carried out, in the history of nutrition and chronic disease research. On Tokelau, the primary changes during the course of the study came in the mid-1970s with the establishment of a cash economy and trading post on the atolls. The year-round availability of imported foods led to a decrease in coconut consumption to roughly half of all calories. This was offset by a seven-fold increase in sugar consumption and a nearly six-fold increase in flour consumed, from 12 pounds per person annually to 70 pounds. Whoa! The islanders also began eating canned meats and frozen foods, which they stored in freezers donated by the United Nations. By 1980, 6 pounds of mutton per capita, 3 pounds of chicken backs, and 5 pounds of tinned corned beef had been consumed. In parenthesis here it says, in comparison, 270 pounds of fish were caught per islander in 1981. 270 pounds of fish. By then, the trading ships were also delivering annually some 18 pounds per person of crackers, biscuits, and twisties, which is a cheese-flavored corn snack. Is that the forerunner of the nacho cheese Dorito? I don't know. They go on to say that smoking increased dramatically, as did alcohol consumption. If the study was done in the year 2019, it would say that vaping had increased. It did not do that, though. That was before vaping, I'm certain. Through the 1960s, the only noteworthy health problems on the island had been skin diseases, asthma, and infectious diseases such as chickenpox, measles, and leprosy. Modern medical services and trained physicians had been available in Tokelau since 1917. In the decades that followed, diabetes, hypertension, heart disease, gout, and cancer, they all appeared, whereas prior they had been absent. This coincided with a decrease in cholesterol levels, which is consistent with a decrease in saturated fat consumption. So, what they're saying is, since they introduced modern foods, cholesterol levels went down. But the average weight increased by 20 to 30 pounds in men and also in women. A similar, albeit smaller, trend was seen in Tokelauan children. The only conspicuous departure from these trends was in 1979 when, and get this, there was a chartered passenger and cargo ship. The name was Senpak Rounder. It ran aground, and the islanders, they went 5 months without fuel or food delivery. So their ship that was going to bring them food and fuel, it was shipwrecked. They couldn't get it. And so there was no sugar, no flour, tobacco, and starch foods, reported the New Zealand Herald. And all the atoll hospitals, they reported a shortage of business during the enforced isolation. It was reported that the Tokelauans had been very healthy during that time, and they had returned to the pre-European diet of their normal coconut and fish. Many people lost weight and felt very much better, including some of the diabetics. And I tell you, part of this makes me sad, folks, because that can't be good for hospitals not to have patients continually. It's a shame they had to do without their patients for 5 to 6 months because of their cargo ship of all the sugar and the starch and the tobacco and the alcohol just didn't make it. That's sad. As for the migrants to New Zealand, the move brought immediate and extensive changes in their diet. Bread and potatoes replaced breadfruit, meat replaced fish, and coconuts virtually vanished from the diet. Fat and saturated fat consumption dropped, to replaced once again by carbohydrates, which, folks, I know you know this, but if you're on a low-fat diet, that means you're eating a whole lot of carbohydrates to make up the difference. Fat and carbohydrate consumption dropped, to be replaced once again by carbohydrates, the difference being due to the big increase in sucrose consumption. This coincided with an almost immediate increase in weight and blood pressure, and a decrease in cholesterol levels, all the more pronounced than the increases witnessed on the Tokelau's. Hypertension was twice as common among the migrants as among the Tokelauans who remained on the islands. The migrants also had an exceptionally higher incidence of diabetes, gout, osteoarthritis, as well as hypertension. Electrocardiographic evidence, like an EKG, suggested that the migrants were at a higher risk for coronary heart disease as compared to those that were non-migrants. The number of factors combined to make this higher disease incidence among the migrants difficult to explain, and for one thing, the Tokelauans who immigrated smoked fewer cigarettes than those who remained on the islands. So tobacco was unlikely to explain this pattern disease. I know that sounds bizarre, but people used to smoke like chimneys back in the 1920s here in America, but they had much less heart disease. The migrants tended to be younger, too, which should have led to the appearance of less chronic disease on the mainland. And though the weights of the Tokelauan migrants were substantially higher than those that stayed back on the atolls, in fact, obesity became a problem for some, and the migrant lifestyle was definitely the more rigorous of the two, meaning they probably worked harder. The men worked in the Forest Service, casting shops of the railway. The women worked in the electrical assembly plants or clothing factories, or they cleaned offices during the evening hours, and they walked some distance to and from the shops with their purchases. Finally, the original Tokelauan diet had been remarkably high in fat and saturated fat, but the migrants consumed considerably less of both. Anyway, to make a long story short, isn't this interesting? You go from a natural, native diet of just consuming what's available. I've got to believe that all the fish that these Tokelauans caught and consumed was wild. It wasn't farm-raised. It didn't say a product of China or farm-raised in Chile, something like that. It was just very vibrant, healthy fish. How's that for a radical idea? What if somebody shoots a deer with a bow and an arrow or a crossbow and they feed the meat to their family? Well, what do deer eat for a living? I think I saw a group of 16 deer. There was a buck that was an 8-point. This was like the last day of deer season. I wasn't hunting. I was just driving down the back roads. The buck itself looked like he could be every bit of... he looked like he was kind of small. Which I'm just kind of guessing, maybe he was a young one, maybe 2 years old, I don't know. I'll ask him to smile and show me his teeth, and that way I can make a better guess. But you're talking about people that eat foods that are natural and wild. What do you think about the concept of eating food that hasn't been processed? Maybe that's the point this morning. If you want to join me on the radio, you have a question about your health, please feel free to call. The phone line is officially open at 903-586-5257. That's 903-586-5257. I'd be glad to answer any questions you may have. If you set your mind like Flint that 2019 is going to be a year where you eat food that's real, I think you're going to do well. Do I have any expectations that 100% of the food that you eat is going to be wild and homegrown in your own garden or your herb garden? No. It's not. But what if 80% of everything that you ate was real? What if it was something that God had made, like a coconut or a fish? So the whole idea that coconuts are evil and toxic, that is just about ridiculous. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Hi. I have a daughter-in-law. Cross on the phone. I may have to go turn it down.
Well, it doesn't sound too bad. You're fine.
Okay. I have a daughter-in-law. Well, I have a daughter and a daughter-in-law that use hyperglycerin. And they can't get the hyperglycerin. It's to regulate their sugar.
Mm-hmm.
The youngest daughter, she was on hormone therapy from her doctor. And they put her on hyperglycerin, and she quit using the hormone, and it helped her. But now they're having a hard time getting it, and they say they're going to quit making it. I was just wondering if there's something that you know of that they could deregulate the sugar.
Do they actually have a diagnosis of diabetes?
No. The youngest one was, neither one of them have diabetes, but the youngest one, she is hypoglycemic when she's diabetic when she's pregnant, but she's past that age now.
Okay. Well, let me give you some ideas. I don't know if you've heard this before, but I heard this the other day. The number one supplement that's sold in North America that people consume is fish oil. It's called an omega-3 fatty acid.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are unique types of fats that actually have health-promoting properties. But I'm going to suggest that one of the things that it can do is it can play a role in helping to stabilize blood sugar to keep it on a more even keel. I read a study about a year ago, and it said the number one predictor of how long a person is going to live on the planet is going to be what the blood sugar is. And so I'm not trying to make a joke or to be negative by saying this, but somebody has a fasting blood sugar around 450, things aren't going to go well. They're just not. But if you can keep your blood sugar somewhere between 70 and 80, you know, as an average, usually you're going to do really, really well. You're not going to have to suffer from heart disease and diabetes and Alzheimer's, things such as that. And so if these kids start taking a little bit of fish oil, that'll probably help them by about 10 to 15% right off the bat. That may not sound impressive, but anything that's going to help stabilize blood sugar is going to be a godsend, right?
Yes. Well, the youngest daughter, I know she takes that already. But she does take the hypoglycemia, and her husband says, I hate to see her without it.
Well, and the number one issue is she's probably eating a food that's causing a drastic surge, high and then low, causing hypoglycemia. And so that's probably my number one interpretation. When somebody has hypoglycemia, they almost always have this hidden food allergy, meaning when they eat it, it causes a little bit of chaos in the bloodstream or the blood sugar. And so the most likely culprits are probably going to be either wheat or corn or dairy, if I had to choose the top three.
She's on a keto diet. She doesn't eat wheat. The other one does.
Okay.
The daughter-in-law eats the wheat, but she doesn't. She's on a keto diet.
Are they listening right now?
No.
Good. Then let's talk about them. Is there any chance that they're fairly stressed? Or do they have quite a bit of stress in their life?
The daughter-in-law has a ton of stress. She's raising 7 of her grandkids.
Oh, my word. She has got
I'm a great-great-grandmother.
Are you really? Great-great?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm 80 years old.
Is there a chance you're going to be a great-great-great?
Probably.
There's a gland that sits just on top of the kidneys. It's called the adrenal gland.
Uh-huh.
And one of the main roles of the adrenal gland is to keep your blood sugar from dropping too low. So mm-hmm. If she's taking a medication to keep her blood sugar stable, one thing that she could do is she could just start feeding and nourishing her adrenal gland. There's an herb called ashwagandha. I know that's a mouthful.
A-U-S.
I'm going to spell it right here. All right, I'm going to have a go at this. A-S-H-W-A-G-H-A-N-D-A. Ashwagandha.
A-S-H-W-A-G-H-A. What was the last time?
N, as in no. D-A.
Okay.
Ashwagandha. But that's an herb. I'm telling you, between that and another herb, there's a plant that grows on the island of Okinawa, Japan, called bitter melon. Bitter melon, it can be really, really good helping to stabilize blood sugar.
Okay.
So she's got nothing to lose by trying a little bit of ashwagandha. A little bit of bitter melon, I guess, because it has a bitter flavor to it. And that's going to have a stabilizing effect. No, okay. She's got seven grandkids that she's raising. For all I know, there's just a circumstance that happened where all of a sudden, if the kids are going to have somebody to raise them, it's going to be her or somebody, or not her, right?
She's got two that are two-year-olds and two that are three-year-olds.
Are they twins?
Then, a four and a six-year-old.
Oh, my goodness. Are these all from the same mama?
No, two mamas.
Two mamas. But she's got them both.
She got them both.
Oh, boy. Well, my hat goes off to her.
Yeah. It's her and her. My oldest son is my... he said, I look forward to the time I got all my kids raised. Now I'm looking forward to when I get all my grandkids raised.
Oh, no. Well, you got to give him credit. At least he's doing the right thing, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Well,
yes,
these are incredible people. So yes. Much of how the body functions, one of the hallmarks when somebody has a hard time with sugar is their body is just overly acidic. So they could just very easily try maybe a half of a teaspoon of Arm & Hammer baking soda or baking soda and a little bit of water each morning.
Mm-hmm.
If that became a routine, that's going to help to kind of alkalize their body. Of course, if I can ever talk a person into eating a diet that's based more on vegetables and then meat and a little bit of fruit, usually it's a home run. I mean, the things that you almost have to avoid are going to be wheat and grains and cereals, which I know the world we live in, it's just so easy to go to the store and buy a box of frosted mini wheats and throw them in a bowl and eat them, right?
Yeah, well, my youngest daughter, like I say, she's on the keto. She doesn't do any of that stuff. But
well, is she making some progress?
The mom of the grandkids does.
Well, is the one that's on the keto diet, does she think it's benefiting her?
Oh, yes. She knows it is.
Well, good.
She feels better, she does better, and she talks to my daughter-in-law all the time about it. But
well, this is really hard to dispute. If she says she's doing keto and she's feeling better and she's seeing good results, how do you argue with something like that? You don't.
No.
Is she, between the two of them, is the one that's on the ketogenic diet, is she a little bit better about drinking water?
Yes. Yes, she drinks pretty good.
I think any time there's a blood sugar issue, I'm always trying to encourage a person to drink water.
Mm-hmm.
You really want to get to the point where you can train yourself each morning when you wake up. Drink a significant amount of water when you're breaking your fast from fasting overnight during sleep. And that might be 16 to 20 ounces of water. I realize that's a lot. But all you can do is put it to the test and see how that habit goes.
Okay.
And so even if you had just a little bit of baking soda, you might find that this is very beneficial to trying to help change your pH from so highly, highly acidic to more alkaline. The other thing that I think of routinely, in order to help your body get rid of acid, you've got to be able to breathe. And I always think that breathing exercises are always overlooked, but they're free. But if somebody ever comes to see me and they have COPD or they have emphysema or they have asthma or, you know, frequent lung infections, mm-hmm. there's a type of breathing called box breathing, just like a box, a cardboard box, B-O-X.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't be bad to try some box breathing a little bit every day. That's been shown to greatly enhance your body. you know, when a person consumes carbohydrates or starch or sugar, it'd be like pancakes or waffles or cereal, your body's going to break that down into glucose. And when you break down glucose, you give off carbon dioxide and water. Well, carbon dioxide is more acidic. You know that we breathe in oxygen, we give off carbon dioxide. Thank the good Lord that plants love to eat or consume carbon dioxide, and they give off oxygen. I have read before that that's one of the greatest theories when it comes to greenhouse gases. The more carbon dioxide that we give off, the more greenhouse gases. So that's why we need trees and plants and bushes.
Yeah, I know that.
So B vitamins are very essential to helping your body convert acids into less harmful substances. And so if a person were to work out really, really hard because it's the new year and they're going to get in shape, well, if they're super sore the next 3 days and they say, I can barely move, I overdid it. That's what you have with too much lactic acid that builds up. But the body requires a certain amount of B vitamins just to help reduce and get rid of all these acids like lactic acid and carbonic acid. And all these acids, they're just the normal byproducts of metabolism. So it's hard to beat fresh air and being outside and exercising and eating real food that God made.
Yeah.
Can I ask you? I was going to ask you a personal question. Do you like to eat broccoli?
I love it. I make a soup all the time that is with bok choy, asparagus, broccoli, green beans, cabbage.
Hang on just a second. I've got my pen handy. Now, what is your exact address? I need to know exactly where to come to.
I put about 8 or 9 tablespoons of onion powder in it, and then I put 3 tablespoons of garlic powder.
Oh, that's
all my family loves it, and you eat it with anything.
Now, are you looking
to... It's good even cold, but it's better.
Are you looking to adopt anybody? I'll tell you what, tell me this. Which county do you live in? That way I'll just peruse the back roads until I find you.
Houston County.
Did you say Houston County?
Uh-huh.
Hey, I saw a woman from Houston County yesterday. Anyway.
I don't eat wheat at all because it gives me asthma and I can't breathe when I eat it.
Oh, well, you know what? I've got no place to argue with you. I believe everything that's coming out of your mouth. So when you eat wheat, it makes your asthma worse, right?
Yes. I don't eat it at all. I read every label to make sure it's not even any in the product, right?
Oh, boy. Well, I believe you. Well, you're such a good girl. I'm glad that you are concerned about your daughters.
They're good girls. They're good women. Well, my baby is 59.
Now, does she live anywhere close to you?
Oh, she lives in Gilmer. Both of these two live in Gilmer.
Well, Gilmer is not in Houston County.
No.
I've heard that Gilmer is quite the sophisticated town. Is that true?
Yeah, I guess.
I'm just joking. Where does your other daughter live?
Well, I've got 4 daughters. One lives here. My eldest lives here about 4 or 5 miles from me. And my youngest boy lives here. But my oldest boy and my youngest daughter live in Gilmer. One in Georgia and one in Rockport.
Which is the one that's caring for all the grandchildren?
The one in Gilmer.
The one in Gilmer, okay. Well, my hat goes off to her. She's going to be an incredible woman along with her husband, take care of these kids that way.
Yeah.
She is a wonderful, wonderful human being.
Yeah, they're doing a good job.
I mean, it's not the kids' fault.
No.
But they're making the best of it. Way to go. That's a good story.
Yeah.
I know you've got to be really proud of them.
Yeah, I am. I'm friends of those rotten granddaughters.
Well, you know what's happened here. The way that you raised your children, you gave them great character lessons every day. Way to go. I'm giving you an A+ on your report card today.
Well, thank you. I've got good kids. They're really good and they're hard workers.
Well, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, right? Well, I thank you very much for your phone call. I hope your weekend goes well and maybe the sun will come out and you can go outside and sit and read.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. God bless you. Bye-bye. All right, if you'd like to join me on the radio, there's a phone line open, 903-586-5257. Nobody calls. I've got a short story I'm going to read to you. It's almost unbelievable, but I mean, I totally believe it. So here goes. In the year 19, excuse me, did I say 19? I meant to say 18. Let's go to the phone lines instead. This is better. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. Thank you very much for your call.
Good. Good. Thank you. Sorry, I've got this crud going on. But I wanted to ask you a couple of questions. Glutathione, does it matter the brand?
Oh, it's like anything else. You get what you pay for. And are you talking about purchasing what's called reduced glutathione as a supplement?
Don't know.
Well, can I tell you what I usually go for?
Yeah.
You realize that packaging and capsules and tablets, that's where all the expense is. And I'm a fan if you're going to take glutathione. Well, I know this sounds kind of weird, but I love the idea of just purchasing the loose powdered glutathione and just taking a very small amount and just putting it on your tongue or under your tongue and just sucking on it.
Oh, I didn't know it came that way.
Yeah, yeah.
It's even better for me.
Well, the cost is going to be significantly less, but I like
Drug Emporium or any of these health food stores, Granary?
Yes, try those. I just don't know the answer to that question.
Okay, but it comes loose.
Yes, you can. You can buy a packet of it, and so I'm just telling you as an example, if you were to get on the Internet and type in, where do I purchase a packet of reduced glutathione?
Okay.
See, you can.
And does that absorb a little bit better in your body? Is that
well? Here's what I think. Anytime that you're concerned about the absorption of a substance, which I am not going to tell you a lie today and tell you that you're going to absorb 100% of glutathione, but then again, I could probably make a case for almost every nutrient. You do not have 100% absorption of every nutrient that you take. And so if you eat a bowl full or a plate of cooked kale with butter on it, there's no way your body can absorb 100% of the calcium in the kale. But it'll absorb, 40% of it, no problem, which is the way that God designed it. But if you take glutathione powder, or like reduced glutathione, and you put just a smidgen, like an eighth of a teaspoon under your tongue, at least you're putting it in contact with that sublingual artery and vein so you can get it right into circulation.
Yep. Okay, I got that. A quarter of a teaspoon?
Or an eighth of a teaspoon, yeah.
An eighth of a teaspoon. Okay, because I do have a malabsorption issue, I think.
Okay.
And so the other thing was, what can you do for your cortisol level?
You're talking about the number one problem in America right now. It is absolutely the top problem. Have you ever heard of somebody having type 2 diabetes and they kind of call it insulin resistance?
Yes.
Well, cortisol, what they should do is they should coin a phrase called cortisol resistance, because probably, truth be known, 90% of the population has this problem. Well, you don't know this, but I tagged an article in a journal over here, and then the title of the article is called Cortisol, Food, and Sleep. And so I can read it to you after you're off the air with me, but what I'm going to say is there's a lot of ways to control cortisol, and I'm going to tell you a story that I thought was kind of funny. A lady came to see me, and she's having a very, very significant issue sleeping. Let's just say she doesn't sleep deep enough, and her sleep is not as satisfying and good as it used to be. Does that make sense? And so when she goes to bed at night, she wakes up frequently. She might even have some issues with, almost perimenopausal symptoms of hot flashes. I'm a man. I've never had a hot flash. I don't even know how to relate to that. But you know about those probably, right?
Okay. You're talking about me.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. Yeah. Now, we agreed I wouldn't mention your name after I told you. No, I know this is not your story. This is somebody else's. But what we talked about was there is a chemical or a hormone that's produced within your brain. It's called oxytocin. Have you ever heard of oxytocin?
I have.
And sometimes oxytocin is known as the love hormone or the bonding hormone. And so when you have plenty of oxytocin, you feel cherished and loved and cared for. And so if there was a little 2-year-old boy that was throwing a temper tantrum on the floor and he was like kicking and, screaming, all you have to do is bend over and hold him in your arms and hold him close. And after about 30 seconds of all that hugging and touching, he starts to get a surge of oxytocin. And what that does is it just calms him down. all of a sudden he's forgotten why he's angry. And so it works as simple as that. But this woman, she was telling me about getting one of these weighted blankets. Have you ever heard of those?
Yes, I have.
What they do is they take these little glass beads. And the last time I checked, glass beads are non-toxic. Now, if they were lead beads, those might be toxic. But if they're made of glass, that's just sand.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you told me what is the cleanest material of all time that I could drink water out of, I would say it's a glass. Not a plastic glass, but a glass.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they have these fabric blankets that have square patches filled with glass beads. And you can order them in 15 pounds, 20 pounds, things like that. You just have to decide what size you want. But I asked her, I said, how did the weighted blanket go? She said, oh, my word. I have never slept so deeply in my entire life as when I put that weighted blanket on. But, you know, that's their entire reason why they're sold, is to help improve the quality of the sleep. And so the idea is, when you have something that compresses and kind of squeezes your body like that, you know, hers was a 15-pound blanket. That may sound kind of heavy, but I think it worked well. But she said, I didn't even want to get out of bed in the morning. I felt so good. When's the last time that you woke up in the morning and said, this feels so good right now, I don't want to move? When's the last time?
Well, I started taking magnesium in a higher dose.
Well, magnesium helps get rid of excess cortisol. That's good.
Oh, so my sleep has been improving. I usually go to bed at 10, and I wake up at 1 or 2, and I'm up for 2 to 3 hours,
mm-hmm.
and then I go back. I get usually about 5 hours straight sleep, maybe 4.
And see, cortisol, just for the sake of everyone listening, it's considered a catabolic hormone. And a catabolic hormone does one thing. It rips your body to pieces. That's probably a little bit overly dramatic on my part, but what should happen is, sleep is literally supposed to be just about
healing.
The most yes, exactly. You beat me to the punch. Sleep is supposed to be the most anabolic process that we go through. That means if your sleep is good, you could actually grow muscle at night instead of lose muscle. But when cortisol is elevated, you tend to lose muscle at night. Or cortisol, it breaks down your bones, so your bones become thinner. Or you lose the size of your organs or your brain. And so even just correcting the sleep, so the idea behind the weighted blanket, it helps increase the secretion or the surging or the pulsing or squirting, however you want to say it, of that hormone from your pituitary called oxytocin. But see, I dig that idea.
Yeah,
because number
yeah.
one, there's no drug.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like somebody's giving you like massive amounts of a chemical to kind of induce a semi-comatose state of zombie land.
Yeah.
I mean, do you know how many people are taking sleep remedies where they're like basically zombies for a few hours once they wake up? It's just horrible.
Yeah, my family, because I believe this is hereditary in our family.
Well, you're going to agree with me that we all have weaknesses. And I read an article the other day, and I know this sounds horrible, what I'm about to repeat, but the title of the article is, If Mama's Lazy or the Kid's Lazy?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is yes. And they were trying to make a genetic correlation, but have you ever heard the phrase that hard work hadn't killed anyone?
Yes.
So if your mom and your dad, they worked hard and you learned how to do that from them, I just got to believe that's true. And so if mama is really, really lazy, I think she kind of helps impart some of these weaknesses along the genetic line or lineage to where the kids kind of might be what they see and witness and all the other stuff that goes along with it. So
I don't know about that, but they've had sleep issues since they were young.
Well, and we're trying to reverse that trend, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so one of the ways that you can go about this, just like you said a while ago, magnesium is not a panacea, just like this weighted blanket is not a panacea. You're trying to do as many things right as possible. So I would venture a guess that the more time that children or adults spend out of doors, the lower the cortisol at night.
Ah.
And so what is it that is responsible for triggering the body's production of a substance called melatonin. It's going to be light.
Mm-hmm.
And so light through the day tends to enhance it later. But if you stay awake with bright light or staring at a computer or a television playing video games, that might kind of kill your melatonin secretion. So natural light that God has made is good for that, but artificial light is bad for it.
Well, my last cortisol test, it was high in the morning and low at night.
And you know what? Forgive me for saying this, but I don't know that I can learn just a whole bunch from that. I really think that I can learn more about you by you telling me I'm awake at 1 o'clock in the morning. Or did you say I go to bed at 10, I'm wide awake at 1 o'clock, and it takes me 2 hours to go back to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
I really have more faith in that statement, because in the real world, even if your cortisol test, I wouldn't be surprised if you told me your cortisol test is normal. I just don't know that we can learn a whole lot by that, because what you have is you have what's called cortisol resistance. And so your body over time is no longer responding to it, but if you have a surge of cortisol or adrenaline or insulin at 1 o'clock in the morning, well, listen, you're going to wake up wide awake and go, oh, I guess I'm supposed to think about all the issues with my family right now. I personally have never done that. Ha ha.
Well, what is your feeling on the ACH test?
What is it? What is it?
It is a test only done in Tyler, but it's for cortisol levels, and it's a blood test, and it takes place over several hours.
Do you actually need to do it?
No, I read about it.
I know, but didn't you just tell me you're waking up at 1 o'clock in the morning? You're awake for 2 hours.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know.
Is it better cycle?
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah.
Good point.
No. I understand what you're saying, and I respect it. You can do all the tests you want, but it doesn't change in the real world. You're telling me all the information I need to know.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what's your feeling on hormone identity? What is it called? Identical hormone replacement?
At our age.
Well, yeah, bioidentical.
Okay.
At our age.
Well, let's go backwards for a second. Most likely, there's like a 99.9% chance that you're right about this, and I'm just going to agree with you, which means I'm just confirming that you're right. So there's just too much cortisol, and you have cortisol resistance. The issue is, what do we do to correct that?
Mm-hmm.
And so what if, do you spend plenty of time outside anyway?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, don't change that. But what,
I have a farm.
Have you thought about becoming a professional farmer?
No.
Do you know anything about goats?
You like lamb?
Do you have lambs?
Yes.
Are they super cute when they're teeny tiny?
They are.
Are they cute when they get older?
I think so.
Okay, yeah, just checking.
That's why
I
have them.
Your body needs...
But I raise them for meat. Yeah.
Gotcha. If you have an issue with cortisol, you've already discovered there's a correlation or a benefit to taking magnesium. Your body requires magnesium to make sure your body can downregulate or break down cortisol when it builds up. So you know that you need magnesium and you're taking it, so you're getting a benefit. There's two hormones that I always think about that get rid of cortisol faster than any other. One is oxytocin. And so I know what I'm saying. Either it's going to come across as super ridiculous and undoable, or it's going to start the wheels of motion in your mind, starting you to thinking that the more... And see, would you believe me if I said, if you sit down at your table today or your desk or in a chair and you write a beautiful note to somebody that you love and you care about, maybe it's a person at church that's sick, and you write them a note and say, you just don't know how much you mean to me. I miss you so much. I pray that the Lord will help you get well. I'm praying for you. Can I bring you lamb chops later today? Something like that. But when you do, when there's acts of kindness and service like that that are selfless, your body starts surging and releasing more oxytocin. Now, I am not trying to tell you that I completely understand how this works. I'm just telling you it works, and I believe it. So any chance that you have to open a door for a sweet older gentleman that's, you know, barely getting in the front door at Walmart, well, Never mind. They have automatic robotic doors. Sorry. Okay. Well, or somewhere. You get the idea. But what you're doing is you're training your pituitary to start releasing. Just like your body can learn to overproduce cortisol, we're trying to retrain it to lower cortisol. And so one of the ways of doing that is by improving both melatonin levels and oxytocin levels. And there's some people that do really well if they take 1 milligram of melatonin every hour on the hour throughout the waking daylight moments, as long as you're not operating heavy bulldozers and machinery or flying aircraft.
Okay.
When's the last time that you've flown your biplane over the corn crops for crop dusting purposes?
Let me think.
You have to think.
That's chemicals. I don't do that.
Okay. Well, you gave that up a few months ago, right?
Yeah.
And so any opportunity that you have to touch somebody, to hug them, a kiss on the cheek, you know, caressing a grandchild, holding hands, stroking your favorite lamb, petting a dog, acts of kindness, holding the door open, gratitude. What you're doing is you're training more oxytocin. But the whole idea of that weighted blanket, you got nothing to lose. Well, except money. I forgot that part.
So, it is expensive. I've looked at them.
Well, you know, I looked at one the other day out of just great curiosity on Amazon.com. They had one that was 70 inches by 80 inches.
Oh.
And it weighed 20 pounds. You know what the price? You know what? Well, are you kidding? You're going to got to go big or go home, right? A 15-pound blanket, that's for a girl. Those are for sissies. I'm a man. 20 pounds, baby. but I think it was $123.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. I saw it for $279 at Tuesday morning.
Well, I just found you one for half price.
Yeah, that's great.
Actually, it's here more than half price, right? And so, I mean, if you think about it, what would it be worth if you knew that your sleep would improve by 50%? Now, I'm not trying to overpromise that, but I've seen this work over and over and over again. And so a lot of times if a person uses one of those polyester plastic type, you know, blankets to sleep with, they do so much better if we give them a cotton blanket. Now, number one, cotton is real.
Yeah.
I mean, that's grown from the dirt of the earth. But what would you guess? That a cotton blanket is significantly heavier.
Yes.
So sometimes a cotton blanket will do a similar thing if you just like get a couple of them and fold them over on top of you. It's either that or I have another idea. I don't know if you like this or not. You might. You could actually have a lamb lay on either side of you in your bed to compress your body and get your oxytocin up that way. Have you trained them to lay down at night?
No, I have a dog that does it for me.
Well, yeah, but your dog is a Chihuahua. That's not enough weight. So, yes, and so both oxytocin and melatonin, they help drastically decrease cortisol levels. And what you're doing is you're trying to there are other things that do it also. I can't mention them because they could be slightly illegal. But what you're doing is you're trying to downregulate all this excessive cortisol, and it's probably easily 90% of the population. They've got this problem. And
wow.
So if you start your day with a 6-pack of Mountain Dews, we're heading in the wrong direction.
I agree. That's lemon water.
You're a good girl.
I've listened to you for years.
I know what you want. You want to be able to lay down in bed, and you want to be able to turn your mind off and not overthink everything, right?
Exactly.
And so if you wake up wide awake at 1 o'clock in the morning, what do? Your mind goes back to thinking about, how do I solve this and solve that and figure this out and figure that out?
Luckily, it goes to praying, so
you're a genius. Well, I'm telling you, that is absolutely the very best. Well, can I ask you a personal question?
Sure.
If you wake up wide awake, do you sometimes have a hard time sticking with the prayer to completion, or does your mind ever drift off?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Well, and that would be an indication there's probably just a little bit too much cortisol. And so you've heard of the term rumination, right?
No, I haven't.
Well, let's call a, and I'm not comparing you to a cow. I'm calling a cow a ruminant.
Oh, yes.
Because they essentially have more than... If I say they have
a sheep.
Yeah. They're ruminants also.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do the sheep chew the cud?
Yes.
Okay. And so what happens is they eat some delicious alfalfa hay. And a little while later, they revisit that same meal. It comes back up and they chew on it some more, right?
That's right.
And so in humans, the idea of rumination is you keep chewing on these stressful situations that come up that we think about or that I might worry about or stress over. That's rumination, where you keep revisiting the same problem over and over again. And then, you know, and see, you and I, we could just kind of intellectually ask ourselves, I could say to myself, Roy, is this really doing you any good, thinking about the same issue that you have no control over? You couldn't change it if you wanted to. It's in the past. You can't do anything about it, son. Why are you thinking about that? Instead, I'm positive that what you're doing is you're praying because you're inquiring of God, how do you want me to use my time, Lord? What am I supposed to do during the day? And you're asking
me for
help. No, I'm
usually praying for others.
Well, that's
those
because
who've been on my heart for the day.
Well, you're the sweetest woman of all time.
I feel that's what you're supposed to do.
Well, I agree.
But I should ask for solving issues. Maybe that would help me go to sleep, but no.
Well, you know, I would say the Bible passage that I read this morning concerned Elijah's student, Elisha. And Elisha prayed that his servant's eyes would be open. And when he was open, he was terrified because he saw this vast, was it the Assyrian army? But when his eyes were opened, he saw that God had all these fiery horses and chariots all around, and he goes, oh my goodness, we don't have anything to worry about. God's provision is so much greater than. And so then Elisha prayed that all these enemy soldiers would be blinded, and then he just led them right into Samaria.
Mm-hmm.
And the king said, should I kill him? He said, no, prepare a feast for him.
Mm-hmm.
And he sent him away, and guess what happened? They stopped raiding Jerusalem and Samaria, which there, I think there's a lesson in there for me. I'm sure there's no lesson for anybody else, only for me. That sometimes when you treat somebody with kindness, even though they probably deserve death, things are going to go a lot better for you and God's going to be pleased.
Amen.
At least that's what I'm hearing.
Yep, exactly. Well, you have given me a wealth of information. I'm going to work on this with the melatonin, and I'm going to try that. How many days do you do that for, the 1 milligram?
About 7 days.
7 days? Okay. Mm-hmm.
Now, you're going to experience some things here.
Okay.
I'm going to let you tell me what those are.
Hallucinations but, or something?
Oh, yeah. You're going to experience some stuff, sister. But if you will, let's just say that what that could do is that can help drastically down-regulate all the cortisol secretion. You know, the body can adapt to anything if we give it the right circumstances, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Even, I know it's shocking, but even a person that's not used to drinking any water or letting a drop of sunlight touch their skin, they can actually be bold and they can try drinking a glass of water maybe once a day, whereas it's never been done before. And they might actually get off the computer and walk outside and let that drop of light hit their fingernail or something. Radical ideas, right?
Radical. No, there's some people who just don't do that, you know. I can't imagine not drinking water.
Or being outside with your lambs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, okay. Exactly.
Well, I appreciate your phone call very, very much.
You're very welcome, and if you need any sheep, you let me know.
I will. Are they good at eating poison ivy?
You know, I don't know about sheep. I know goats are.
Well, I've heard that goats just plow right through it like it's candy.
Wow, that's wonderful.
But you're not sure if sheep will just devour a poison ivy.
I am not sure, because well, let me ask I don't you a have different... any.
Oh, I get it. You don't have any poison ivy, right?
No.
I wonder why. It's probably because your sheep devoured it. Well, thank you. Thank you for your phone call.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right, bye. Okay, I think I have time for one last story. Actually, I don't have time for one last story. Rats, I have time for a quick phone call. All right, you've got a hot minute to talk.
Hey, good morning, Dr. Morgan. How you doing?
I'm good.
I'm glad. Happy birthday, belated again.
Thank you. Well, you know, I'm an old man now.
Yeah, I know you are. You're like me. You're getting up there. But I
wouldn't go that far. But anyway, keep going.
Shut up. I'm glad to talk to you again.
It's good talking to you, Jerry.
Yeah, really. Dr. Morgan, you said something about powdered glutathione.
Yeah, it's probably the most potent antioxidant the human body makes, but you can get glutathione for the purpose of trying to improve your health.
Okay, could you get the capsules and just break them apart?
Oh, yeah, you can, and put them right under your tongue. Yeah, that's genius.
So you could take a whole capsule of glutathione and put it under your tongue.
And that way you're trying to bypass your digestive tract, and it goes right into circulation.
Right, and it's a potent. What did you say?
Do you know what I could probably say just very quickly? Every disease and health problem is a glutathione deficiency.
Wow!
And so it's literally going to bless every cell in your body, buddy.
Okay. Hey, thank you, doctor.
Thank you. Good to hear from you, man. I hope you have a very good day.
You too, buddy. Bye bye.
Maybe the sun will shine at your house today.
Hey, I'm talking to you. It's shining.
Hey, take care. Thanks a bunch.
You too, buddy.
Bye-bye. All right, I think I have 5 seconds left. Thank you for joining me. Lord willing, I'll be back this time next week, and we'll talk on some more good things.